Hello and welcome back. This is True Story, powered by the Institute of Documentary Film. It is our 20th anniversary. Thanks for listening. Today we have Jan Gebert, and he is a director and has been working with the Institute of Documentary Film for a while now. And specifically, we're going to be talking about his film, When the War Comes. Hello, Jan. Welcome to True Story.
Hello.
Happy to be here.
Yes, sure.
First, I wanted to say that you've been working with IDF since 2015. And then in 2019, this film, When the War Comes, won for Best Editing at the Liburnia Film Festival in 2019.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Jana Volčková won the award, yeah.
Wonderful. For our listeners, for those who might have seen the film, but specifically for the ones who haven't, it's really quite a challenging film. It brings up a lot of issues. It did for me. As I sit having this interview, there are many things that I'm going to want to ask you about that I may not be able to, so I'm just going to do my best. But it really made me grapple with a bunch of different issues. Mm-hmm. So please, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about this film from your point of view. What is When the War Comes all about?
The film was basically my comment on the situation we were living in Central Europe or probably in the all Western world. The rise of populism, a refugee crisis, and all these elements together created a very special, for me, unprecedented situation. And I wanted to reflect it in the film through the story of a guy who is a leader of a paramilitary organization. He's in the forest, but he's aiming to make it into politics. So I filmed kind of the rise of a leader, a populist leader, which was something that we saw everywhere at that time, especially in 2016 with Brexit and Trump and all those populists rising to power. That was what I wanted to say.
Wow. Well, you did that, and you did it with aplomb. And the film was finished in 2018, and here we are in 2021. So some of my questions will refer back to this. I will attempt to be a little linear, so I keep track. But I want you to think about what, and one of the aspects is, where are we now? You know, just where are we now? Where are we with? So the lead character, his name is Petr. Mm-hmm. And I understand your impetus for making the film. And I understand what drove you to this topic. How did you find Petr specifically and his paramilitary group? I'm sure he was pretty easy to find, but...
He was easy to find, but it was not that easy to start filming him.
Okay.
Of course, he was very cautious. He, you know, it's... I think we both figured out each other very quickly. So he knew what I was standing for, what my political views were. And we were both aware that we are on, you know, on different sides of the barricade, in a way. But still, there was some, you know, human connection, which was, in a way, scary, because it was very disturbing to realize that this guy was very, you know, middle class, a very ordinary kind of guy. But still, he was playing with fire. He was playing with something very, very dangerous. And it was intriguing for me to uncover his story and to dig, you know, as deep as I could to understand what's happening. Why is he playing such a dangerous game with such dangerous cards, even though he looks so normal?
Again, for our listeners, yeah, he looks super normal. And there are definitely moments in the film, without giving too much away, where the, you know, when he gets a haircut and he dresses up for an event, there's a little bit of... It's too much of a Hitler parallel for me, to be honest with you. You know, he looks very young, white, clean cut, making professional headshots for his political career.
It's
pretty intense.
Yeah. I think he was trying to copy the path to power. He was trying to employ all the tricks that the real politicians use. Good photographs, good gestures while he's, you know, having a speech, all these things. He was learning it on the way, and he was learning it very fast, and it was incredible to see his transition from a guy who was kind of lost, maybe, as a leader in the forest, and to see him in the end, when he got fatter and definitely looked like a politician in the end, even though there was still, you know, way to go.
Jan Gepard graduated in history and Latin American studies at Charles University in Prague. He also studied in Spain, the USA, and Mexico, and works as both a journalist and filmmaker. In 2012, his film Stone Games premiered at the Huelva International Documentary Film Festival, receiving the special jury prize. His first feature documentary film, When the War Comes, premiered at the 2018 Berlinale as the opening film of the Panorama documentary section and won major awards at many international festivals, including IDFA, Visions du Real, Sheffield Docfest, and the Sarajevo Film Festival. He also won the Czech Film Critics Award for the Best Czech Documentary in 2018. What was your sense about, you alluded to you guys sniffing each other out at the beginning, and how long did the filming actually take from beginning to end?
It was pretty long. It was maybe almost 3 years.
Has he seen the film?
Sure. Before we premiered the film, I showed the film to him. That was, you know, part of our deal, that I would show it to him, even before we presented it in Berlin.
Was he comfortable with what you shared?
At first, he was laughing. That was his first reaction to what he saw.
Okay.
It was like a reaction similar to when you see yourself in a family video or something like that. He was just amused by the fact that he sees himself on TV or on the screen.
Interesting.
But then, the day later, he probably regretted or something happened, and he said he threatened that he would do everything in his power to stop the film and to prevent it from being presented in Berlin because there is something missing. I can't remember really well. But the next day he thought it over and he changed his mind, and he was his reaction was different and he was against it. But I think there was some third wave, and he just reconciled himself with the film, probably.
Are you in touch with him now?
No.
Not at all?
No. But the last time I saw them was a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Because they get together every year. They have this anniversary in January. And it was pretty interesting to see that the number of them shrinked, you know, to half.
Really?
Yeah, to half, I guess.
Oh, I'm sure he's disappointed.
Yeah, he's probably disappointed, but the fact was that a lot of journalists and a lot of people who saw this film, you know, were saying that that this is a kind of propaganda for that group, and I was used as a useful idiot for them, that I gave them space, but I never could really relate to it, and I could never really understand that point. And I think I was right.
For making this film,
I was right. Because the facts are facts, you know, their number shrinked. So I guess I caused the opposite of what many people were afraid of.
In discussions with my colleagues about this film, one of the questions that came up was, how did you create that space where you did not, I'm assuming you didn't speak up or share your point of view? You might have had conversations with him on off camera, but on camera, you definitely are removed as of, you know, you're just creating the frame and a little, you know, fly on the wall, so to speak, of this young man's life.
In a way.
And how did you do that?
I had some idea where he would be going. Since 2015, when I started filming him, I knew that this guy's not going to stay in the forest, that he's heading towards the politics. And I guess I figured him out. And then I was just waiting for those moments that would illustrate that story, you know, that path. And I waited for it. And sometimes I asked him for a specific moment, you know, for a specific situation. I asked him if I could, film some meeting of the leaders of the group. And he invited me over, and there I filmed, you know, very funny situations where he bans election within
his paramilitary group. Moment.
Yeah, and he proclaims himself as a leader for life. And this was a very good, situation for the film. And it happened in a way naturally. But first I had to know what I was looking for. And I guess I knew what I was looking for. But it's not that I would be with him 24/7. It was impossible to do that because we all lived 400 kilometers from his home. So we need to plan it. And I need to, you know, in order to make this film, I really had to know what to film. So there was a lot of work behind it, you know, a lot of research and a lot of stuff because, you know, your shooting days are limited, of course. If you take crew with you and you travel all the way from Prague to Trnava, you cannot go there just to film something. You need to go there to film something that you know that would work for the story. So I did a lot of research through Facebook. You know, I checked the images of the, you know, previous events. And that way I found situation or places or moments that would be interesting for me, for the film.
Were you ever scared?
No, there was no reason to be scared.
Okay.
No. No, okay. They are not that dangerous. It's just they are playing with something very, very dangerous.
Did you feel like you were playing with something dangerous?
No, not myself. I was just, I had this anthropological perspective, you know.
Okay.
That I was trying to understand what was happening, and I didn't want to intrude into the process with my views or with anything. I just didn't want to contaminate it with it. So I think that film is pretty much anthropological.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So on that note, what might be some of the reasons young Slovak boys would want to be one of his recruits? What did you learn about why people join this paramilitary group?
Probably because they lack purpose in their life, and he gives them purpose, you know. He tells them that if they join him, they would be these defenders of the Slovak nation.
Yeah.
And they would defend it from the enemies, from the migrants, from the liberals, from all that crap, you know. So the group gives them sense of belonging and purpose. And it's pretty important, I think, to have a purpose in life.
Volá sa Peter Šoček, som zakladateľ slovenských brancov. Bude sa mi narábané ako s brancom, nie ako s civilistom. A teraz je číslo 1-0-0-1.
As I mentioned from the beginning, the film really brought up a lot of things for me. I'm almost speechless, or like, what do we do now? Or yikes, you know, because the lack of critical thinking. Again, there is a scene, spoiler alert, but where there are a whole bunch of people coming into Slovakia, you know, and the slurs that are coming out of these gentlemen's mouths are terrible, while also the rhetoric for his group is, to some degree, pro-democracy, pro-freedom, and it just seems meaningless because there doesn't seem to be any real critical discussion about what that actually means. No serious geopolitical conversations. A lot of fear and a lot of young recruits. So it is very endearing for me to hear that the numbers went down at that yearly meeting. But I guess I'm just, concerned, or what's happening now, or
But I think the group is not the root of the evil. You
no,
know?
Of
I think
not. Even though young boys, especially, are not the root of the evil.
Sure, I think even if the group disappeared completely, I think the problem would not disappear. We have a great problem here in Central Europe, and I think it's deep rooted in the society, and they are just a flower that came out of that ground. of that atmosphere, but I think the problem is there within us. This group is just a reflection of the politics in Central Europe. They were just imitating what the real leaders were doing. They were not saying anything that would be more extreme than what the Czech president says, or Polish, or Viktor Orban, or Donald Trump, right, at the time.
Ugh.
They were just like them. The only difference was that they were wearing uniforms and were equipped with fake guns and age. Those were the only differences. Ideologically wise, they were on the same page as the top leaders, which is scary, and
yes,
which is why the problem will not disappear as long as we have this kind of leaders.
You're right. And probably, again, one of the reasons why you made this anthropological film.
Yeah.
To remove the veil and give it a frame.
Yeah, well, that I tried to say something through it. Yeah.
Well, you definitely... Keeping the conversation going, what was some of the critical response by your colleagues as well as audience members at film festivals?
Well, I think it had good reception, especially in Western Europe. For some reason, the audience was more interested, and way more people came to see the film in Western European festivals than in the East Europe, probably because the audience or people in Eastern Europe feels that they are living that situation and they don't want to recall it in cinema, or I don't know why, but the reception was good. Well, the only thing that disappointed me was this, I guess it was really stupid, you know, to tell me that I made a propaganda film, which was so stupid, really. I couldn't really relate to it, and up till today, it makes me angry, you know, whenever someone says that. But it's probably a necessary, you know, comment so that everybody feels comfortable.
Well, I understand. I mean, the bottom line is, Jan, you made a very uncomfortable film. And I think that's okay. But at least for me, it was really heavy with contradictions. Not you as a filmmaker, but this young person, these recruits, the language. There is so much language that it doesn't match behavior. There's so much dehumanizing language. And this is part of the populist movement,
yeah,
you know, to use dehumanizing language. And, you know, and as he says in the film, even bad publicity is good publicity.
Uh-huh.
So it's not that you made a propaganda film, but do you think that Petr thinks that it's a propaganda film?
Yeah, maybe really at the beginning, maybe he thought so, but now really the number of the recruits is half of what it used to be. And it was rising all those years that I was filming them. It was, you know, steep rise. And suddenly it fell down for some reason. And I guess the film has to do something with it. Because if you shine a light on a problem, I think this is the first step to a solution. And I think this is what happened with this group. So maybe he thought that he would outsmart, you know, those Prague filmmakers, but he just didn't make it.
Quote unquote liberal snowflakes.
Kind of, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I never considered
really
this a war.
Crazy.
I didn't want to capture him. I really could make a film where he would look like a real jerk, as an idiot, you know, as a stupid guy, you know, and to make this stereotypical portrayal of him. But I really was looking for the essence, and that's why the image is full of those contradictions. But I think it's closer to the truth.
Completely. I mean, those paradoxes we must live in every day. And yet, to that point, I understand I'm getting from you that you had a bit of a mission to make, you know, it's not obviously a propaganda film, but you wanted to shine a light. Is there any other follow-up regarding, like, you know, so you made this film, what's the current situation like?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is no follow-up as far as the filmmaking goes, but I made a follow-up of debates. We organized a series.
Okay, that's what I'm interested in. Yeah, tell me more.
It was pretty intense, and I think it was good, and I'm proud of that, because we organized debates where we invited Petr, the leader of the organization, as well. because he's part of the problem. And I think the best debate we had was in Docs.
Okay.
At the gallery, he was there, and he was debating with a Holocaust survivor, with a couple of journalists, with Fedor Gal specifically, the Holocaust survivor. And it was a pretty intense. And the disturbing thing was that if I used like football terminology, I think the first half he won. He was winning, and okay. there were three very intelligent people against him, but he was still kind of winning because they thought that he would be some kind of easy opponent, easy victim. But it didn't happen. He was very well prepared for the debate, and he knew what to answer, and he was good, you know, first half. And they realized that if they want to beat this new form of, let's say, I don't know, fascism, a new form of evil, they would need to try harder, that those old weapons are not useful anymore, don't do anymore.
Meaning the rhetoric,
yeah,
the language
rhetoric,
he was using, the
arguments.
The arguments that he was presenting.
Well, the arguments that the liberals used against him were not enough to beat him. So they had to think a little harder because they realized that this enemy is not going to be that easy as they expected.
So back to your football metaphor, how did the second half of the debate go down?
It took them a while to, you know, get themselves together and to be better than him, but it took them some time. And everybody was kind of shocked. Even the audience was in a shock because they thought that there would be this typical nationalist guy, a racist, and they would use their arguments to beat him. But it just proved to be more difficult than they expected. And I think it was a kind of wake, for many people in the audience, I guess it was a wake-up call. They realized that this form of far right has changed and is different than it used to be in the 90s, that we really need to understand it in the complexity, in all those contradictions and paradoxes.
Yeah, and so when I say we, I am a firm believer that the world is round and that we do need to live together. I am not a fan of closed borders. That's some of where I stand personally. So when we're having debates, it's not who wins and who loses because we all lose, you know, if we can't live well together, we all lose. Mm-hmm. So my question is more, and really, I know you're a human being doing the best you can as a filmmaker, anthropologist. Mm. I dig it. What do we do? What do we do? Those debates are harder, but not even debate. How do we come to terms is more my interest. How do we come to terms?
I don't know, but many people that turns to that kind of ideology, they feel kind of humiliated by the system or by us liberals. Maybe it's part of the problem as well, but I don't really know what's the solution of this very, very deep division in the Western world.
I know, it just seems like such a different ideology. And one of the things while watching your film was, you know, his mother is not saying anything or doing anything. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend is tending to the wounded and, you know. Yeah. And just quickly, the ammo used in the film, live or no? Fake.
Which one?
Like when they're training.
Oh, no. It's not real.
Blanks.
No. It's called expansion guns.
Okay.
It's refurbished guns.
Okay.
And they were remodeled so they don't work on real bullets.
Okay. My point though more is this was so normal. It was just allowed. There was no critical discussion. There's nothing. There's no. Talking about geopolitics and global politics and how, you know, they seem to not have any understanding of why people might be fleeing a country, okay? Might need shelter, okay?
Sure.
Like no awareness. So it's those kinds of conversations that I'm pleased to hear that Petr came. I'm pleased. I mean, I know that he came prepared to be, I'm being a little cheeky here, but a tyrant, meaning wonderful rhetoric, public speaking skills, but you know, he has an ideology that he's touting that's not really global. I'd say. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's easy and that any of us are going to have an answer, but, you know, this is how wars start.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
So bringing it back to the conversation, it's a difficult film. It's a beautiful film, listeners. Everyone definitely watch the film When the War Comes. It filmed, it showed at many festivals. And specifically, I want to know, how was working with HBO? Were they supportive?
Yes, sure. It was a good cooperation. They were very quick to give us money for the development.
That's wonderful.
Which was very important money, because in my experience as a documentary filmmaker, a lot of interesting things is usually happening when you discover the story, you know, and you cannot bring it back. So it's important to have money to film it from the very beginning. Many scenes that were crucial for the film, for instance, when the group meets the refugees, a lot of other stuff was finance of those development money from the very beginning. And then it was good, you know. HBO is a good brand, and with this TV on the board, it's easier to get more money for the film. So we had an okay budget for it. Then we had some, you know, disputes in the end, but I think we figured it out.
Excellent. And then going back to the film specifically one more time, one of the things I've been struggling with watching it is the title is When the War Comes. There is no war. Thankfully, we are sort of peace right now. What do they want? What did you get the sense? And back to the specifics, there's a scene where there's an event and he clearly says, next year, let there be even more people. You know, on one level, he speaks to, we don't want a war. We're just protecting the homeland, all of this stuff. And yet, if the numbers grow and we have a strong militia, what does he really want? I understand completely. Many people with these ideology feel like they don't have a purpose. So great. Now all of these young people have a purpose. Wonderful. But what do you want? You know, you want to a world, you know, a third world war, or no, you don't want a war. You want what? What is it that they want?
Well, I think he wants basically what a lot of populists in Europe wants, to live in a kind of fortress. I think he's on the same page as Marine Le Pen, or maybe with as Viktor Orban or Czech leaders as well. They don't trust the EU. They don't trust anything that comes from the West. And they want to close the borders and to keep us for ourselves, to create a kind of fortress. I think, ideologically speaking, that's his goal.
Interesting. I'm always just interested.
Yeah.
Because I think we've learned through history that that does not work.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And yet people still think that it might work. His playbook is very similar to other people's playbook.
Yeah.
So it's not new news. Mm. It's still just, what do you think you're doing? You know? So, very interesting film, very beautiful film. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you.
As we're wrapping up our conversation,
okay,
are there other documentary filmmakers that you are supporting right now or would love to, you know, use this platform to highlight, shine a light on?
Well, yeah, I really like the people that I work with.
Awesome.
You know, I really enjoy working with Radovan Siebert, with Ondrej Provazník, Martin Dušek, Jana Vlčková, Lukáš Milota, Stanislav Adam. Those are my friends and I really enjoy working with them.
So again, no bad publicity. What's the future of this film? Will it have any more showings when the war comes?
I guess I lost track.
Okay. No problem.
No, I really want to focus on something next.
Cool. So tell us, tell and share with our listeners, what is next for you?
Well, I'm doing one documentary for Czech TV, which is a small thing about young politicians. The final cut will be ready in December. But
that's exciting.
Yeah. but I had only 10 shooting days, so I think it's very limiting. And I guess like 12 days in the editing room, so it can't be really good. But it's going to be okay, I hope. And but I want to, I have a bigger project by coincidence, or I don't know if it's a coincidence, but it's a story set in Slovakia again. It has to do with the murder of Jan Kuciak, and I want to combine a documentary film with an opera. No. And to create
that sounds amazing.
I don't know. Those are two most boring genres in the world, and I want to create the most boring genre ever. Yeah.
Well, we here at True Story and Institute of Documentary Film very much love working with you and give you all of our support. So thank you so much for this conversation, really.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, listeners. This was Jan Gebhard, and we spoke about his film When the War Comes. I'm Nicole Edelman. This is True Story, powered by the Institute of Documentary Film. Thanks for listening, and until next time, bye.
Bye-bye.